Hello, ladies.
Greetings. How are both of you?
I'm doing great and so excited to see you both.
Excellent. We're excited to be here. And I have loved learning a little bit more about F sharp. I am not, I don't come from a C sharp, F sharp .NET background at all. But seeing the great tooling that's being created is really inspiring, and learning about folks' use cases, especially in data science. I'm really excited to share some of the things that we've observed. And then Maria is also going to do awesome deep dives on the .NET Interactive piece. So it's very cool.
Hey, Maria, I want to check that your mic is on. So can you say something? Yeah, I don't think we can hear you yet.
Yep, there might be a mute button in the browser. I know that the conference software is all like, it feels like it's different for every single one.
Yeah.
Yep. But
any better now?
Yes. Absolutely.
Okay. All right. My fancy mic is no longer working. It's time. I think I've had it for like 6 years. You know.
Oh no. All right, time to ask for a new one then. So thank you, ladies. I'm excited to hear more about Polyglot Notebooks. I'm always curious and I always find it fascinating, that topic, and always leave with full of ideas of how I could use that in my world and my day-to-day. So take it away.
Perfect.
Myra.
Excellent. Thank you so much. So to begin with, I guess we could do very brief introductions, and then kind of a roadmap for the conversation today is I'll start off with presenting the most minimal number of slides possible to kind of set the stage for why Polyglot Notebooks are interesting, kind of the usual suspects in the space today, and then also why .NET Interactive and the .NET Interactive notebook experience within VS Code is so compelling as a Python and R person coming into this community. Yeah. Excellent. So Maria, do you want to start with introductions?
Yeah, absolutely. My name is Maria Nagaga. I work on .NET Interactive as well as parts of ASP.NET. So I focus like on .NET minimalism. And .NET Interactive has been a fun experience. Like Paige, I am not an F-sharp developer. but F-sharp is like a huge reason why we did this multi-language notebooks, because we do see it as a really huge push in the .NET ecosystem for data scientists, right? Bringing data science workloads to our users. And unfortunately today, like most of my demos will be slides because I have an incredibly slow machine. So I need an upgrade with that as well, but I do have everything recorded and I hope you enjoy it.
Awesome. Excellent. And my name is Paige. I am a PM based in the developer tools division, and I get to work on really interesting projects in the machine learning and data science space. So for example, code spaces, building out the data science story there, as well as machine learning integrations in developer tools. So if you've seen recently some of the interesting stuff around Copilot, around IntelliCode, I get to work with those teams and sort of help test out that functionality and you know, brainstorm new opportunities for machine learning to be impactful in developer tooling. So with that, I will begin presenting my screen. And this is the first time that I've used this software as well. So bear with me. If things do not go as planned, so sharing screen, sharing window, and soon you should see VS Code in the background. So I'm assuming that everybody can see my screen. If you can't, feel free to like Maria shout out that you cannot. And
I can see it.
Excellent, beautiful. We have success. So this is VS Code. It is my great pleasure to inform everyone that if you, like me, are perhaps not a fan of slides done via PowerPoint or slides.google.com, you can totally do slides within VS Code using the MARP extension. So you can see here that I've got Markdown written off to the left and a preview off to the right. And I am going to expand out. And so hopefully you should see kind of a big full screen version of the slides that we'll be presenting today. So this conversation about polyglot notebooks, I think it's important for us to kind of say, well, what are notebooks and why are they useful? And how do they exist today? And what you can see on the screen here is an example of a notebooks-based environment called JupyterLab. This is the ArcGIS extension in particular for JupyterLab. But it's really a great way to mix data visualization, and descriptions of data all in one place. So it's a really effective communication tool for this kind of work. And when Jupyter Notebooks first started, they were really intended to be, you know, just kind of that, like a fancy REPL with some Markdown, some Python code interspersed. And you know, just kind of a way to communicate analysis. But over time, these notebooks have evolved to be many, many different things to people. And so notebooks today are, you perhaps have heard of Jupyter Notebooks, JupyterLab, Interact, and many other notebook environments. They're used from everything for automating and running makeshift integration tests with things like NBDev, to preparing, delivering, and checking student coursework with NBGrader, to generating API documentation. So you perhaps have a notebook with Markdown and with code, and you run it nightly as a cron job, and it generates an HTML output that's then doing notebook documentation for your library. And the nice thing is that you can develop tests for that, right? Like, so if you make an API change, and then suddenly all of the code that you have and all of the descriptions in your notebooks break, then that's a great indication to the dev team that, you know, perhaps this notebook, you know, it indicates that the API change was problematic, and we should, you know, roll back. You can also publish books, PDF documents, full websites, slides using notebooks. You can have it as an interactive pseudo IDE for data analysis. You can do large-scale data pre-processing jobs. You can create interactive embedded web content. You have fully featured IDEs, you have automated customer support and troubleshooting guides as runbooks, and you can also create these shareable data analysis artifacts. So there are really just so many different and very creative ways that people have evolved notebooks over time. And today, I really want to focus in on this segment right here, which are, you know, Databricks, Polynote, Zeppelin Notebooks, and .NET Interactive, that allow you to do multi-language notebooks and to sort of support these large-scale workflows. And so multi-language notebooks are quite compelling for a number of reasons. And it's largely because, you know, back in the day, I used to be a data scientist and a machine learning engineer. But you would create this beautiful analysis. Perhaps it's using Python or R, and Python and R as languages, you know, they're great at many things, but they also leave a bit to be desired if you're moving into a production context. So I'm not sure if folks on the call are familiar with something called Pandas, but Pandas is a Python library for data preprocessing. If you need to do it on kind of in-memory data sets, you know, it works nicely if you're just doing it on CSVs. if you want to take that model and to move it to work on large scale streaming data, then pandas suddenly does not work quite as well. And perhaps you would need to re-architect this experiment where your data input pre-processing steps are in something like C Sharp or in Java or Scala or, you know, something else that's a bit more performant. And so taking these analyses into production, it can get quite complex. And even if the entire like sort of prototype of a model or a data analysis might be implemented in Python or R, the big broad scheme of things, the data validation steps, the data extraction, kind of these ETL pipeline building steps, the steps for building and testing and having pipeline components, all of this gets rewritten into other languages. And sort of your notebook, even though it has to be maintained over time and updated, gets kind of dismantled and dispersed into these disparate files. And for maintenance purposes, that's terrifying because you don't, yep. And you don't, and I can't see my like the people part. So I think I heard something. So if I steamroll ahead, just be like, hey, you know, like,
and this was me agreeing. I was just like it's hard to maintain. I was like, mm-hmm. That was
awesome. Excellent. And so, and Maria understands it better than anybody else. It's like the sort of breaking apart pieces of a notebook and you know, dismantling it is a nightmare for maintenance purposes, because you end up with all of these disparate files that are managed by perhaps different teams, different people, they're in different languages, when it would really just be lovely to, you know, just say, oh, hey, like this original notebook, here's all of the bit pieces and components that comprise this experiment. And if, you know, later on down the line, you need to update the analysis, the data scientist can say like, okay, well, this pandas logic maps to this Scala logic. And so, you know, Scala person, I made these modifications to the pandas piece, like, please make those same modifications to your Scala piece. And so, yes. So the answer is, how does it go into production? Very painfully, unless you have something like a multi-language solution for notebooks. And with that, I am going to hand it over to Maria to talk a little bit about .NET Interactive Notebooks and about some of the really interesting work and experiments her teams have been doing to bring this to VS Code. The visualization that you see here is from a delightful Medium blog post from Andre about F# and how it can be used from data science. But he's going through and kind of using the .NET Interactive functionality in order to visualize and understand his data set. And with that, I will stop sharing and we can go into Maria's demos.
Thank you so much, Paige. So let me go ahead and also share this as well. So I'm just going to share and pick a screen.
Cool.
Let's do that. I know I've done StreamYard before, but I'm always a little bit nervous. So let me know if you can see my screen and what it looks like. Perfect. So I wanted to kind of start by saying that when .NET Interactive, when we first pitched it, not when it was pitched to my team as an idea, it was one word. Hey, ML.NET and Spark.NET need Jupyter notebooks, and that was it. So they reached out to our team who had built the Try.NET experience, and we're all about how we run code independently and also together. So notebooks actually felt like a natural fit for us. So the first version of .NET Interactive were completely compatible with all the popular Jupyter front ends. So Jupyter Labs, Jupyter Notebooks, .NET Interactive will work the same as it will in VS Code, just minus a few things, like you won't get the same level of IntelliSense that you would get in VS Code as well. But I really wanted to talk about multi-language and why multi-language was important for us as a team. So as I said, we got this, and let me just start my slides. I do not have fancy slides that look like they are in VS Code, but I'll try. So when we were talking to our users and we were talking to the chief data scientist over at Citibank in the United Kingdom, he mentioned all these problems that Paige had shared with you, where you're working with your engineering team that is using something else and you give them your model in Python and then they look at it and they're just like, how do I transfer this into C Sharp? How am I able to leverage the libraries that are popular in Python or JavaScript for their visualization? And he told us like the most important thing for us is the ability to use the right language for the job without the need for a wrapper. So .NET Interactive today has F Sharp, C Sharp, PowerShell, SQL, JavaScript, HTML, and I hope so many more languages in the future. So let's jump into what this experience is like. The goal of this experience is to use the best language for the task at hand without a need for a wrapper. So far, we support 6 languages out of the box. C Sharp and F Sharp, we announced in 2019. PowerShell in 2020, that was brought in by the PowerShell team. JavaScript and HTML support the same month. This allowed us to open up the doors to create rich visualization without the need for a wrapper. Like, we're just like, just build a wrapper around it. We're just like, no, if you want to copy and paste a D3JS sample and access a C# variable from there, you should be able to do that. And this year we introduced SQL support with the SQL team. And we also had the added benefit of richer visualization that didn't require anyone to write any code at all, right? So those are like all these rich experiences. So what does .NET Interactive look like today in VS Code and what can you expect? Overall, richer tooling experience. So you can see IntelliSense, right? That's really cool. And we also made the need to have an optional Python dependency. So when we initially introduced with Jupyter, the biggest feedback that we got specifically from our .NET customers are like, why do I have to install Anaconda and Jupyter Labs and all this stuff and Python in order just to use a .NET notebook? So with VS Code, all you need is VS Code and the .NET Interactive extension, and you are good to go. So what really makes us super cool, like as you said, polyglot, multi-language notebooks are critically important, but being the ability to switch from one language to the other is great. But the ability to share a variable from one language to the next between cells is huge. Like in this sample over here, I have the variable X that was defined in C#. I accessed it in HTML while going through JavaScript. And you can also run the exact same multiple languages in a single cell as well, which can make it really good for things like scripting, right? Or being plugging in your DevOps pipeline. So we wanted to create these experiences that just felt absolutely natural to the scenarios that even non-data scientists, like people who are in C# developers, would just feel like, oh, I could benefit from this experience. As I mentioned that we have SQL support. SQL support for me is one of the funnest things that we've done. When we did this, we said, wouldn't it be cool if we got code completion on the SQL schema? So as you're writing in your code and you've accessed the SQL database, you're actually getting code completion. And then you can also quickly scaffold DB context to use Link, right? Which is incredibly important for our customers as well. So if you're a C# developer and you want to switch to using EF and using Link, you can do that really easily and get the same experience that you'd get, let's say, in VS. And then Java, native JavaScript support. As I mentioned earlier, in this example, we defined a variable in C#, and then we're able to access that exact same variable right within JavaScript using interactive C#, get a variable of C#, and then being able to render it using D3JS, right? And then you're able to bounce between the different languages. Like, okay, I'm going to like set a task, run it through a range, and you begin to see the visualizations controlled in a language that you feel most native to. And the other thing that I also wanted to make sure that we did is being able to leverage popular ecosystems that exist within the Jupyter space. Like Interact has an amazing data explorer. So we created a way for people to just naturally get the data explorer to display their data with just using a method. So by just simply doing dot with Interact Data Explorer, you get this visualization, no extra configuration. You just had to give it an object to work with. And we're also able to do the exact same thing with Sundance, which I think is an incredibly rich library. So everything that we use here is pulled through an extension. You use what you need. So I'm just going to fast forward a bit over here, and you get like cool visualizations like this, right? And you can spin them around, and like the user gets this by just adding an extension. And that's what we wanted for customers. We've also seen people create their own extensions as well that sit on top of the .NET Interactive. There's someone in the community who built a Razor extension. We have people building ASP.NET extensions so they can test their APIs instead of using something like Postman. And these are just like things that people are just naturally feeling is a great fit for notebooks. Oh, and this is one of my favorites. So being able to render real-time live stream data is huge. And in this sample, what we're doing over here is that we're getting data from a thermostat, and we're going to actually render it in a pretty cool visualization. So I'm just going to switch over here. What we're getting over here is that we're able to pull in this JSON file, do all the data processing in C#, and get this really nice 3D beautiful visualization just running in a notebook. You can think of this as a great way for education, a great way for you to build samples and tools. And when I was looking at Houston's demo before, I was just like, oh yeah, Houston could have pumped his data through something like this and get this really cool visualization, which would have both an IoT effect as well as this rich visualization that you get within a notebook. And like, that is all I have for the experiences. And I'd really like to have it, you know, open to the floor for questions.
Absolutely. And it's so exciting for me to see this exist. The data science projects that I do usually follow the same general format, which is you're always trying to pull in data with SQL. Yep. Or if you're in Microsoft land, it's Kusto. But you're pulling in the data. You're potentially pre-processing it with R because you know the tidyverse tools are just beautiful and really sort of intuitive and you know like standard APIs really elegantly documented. And then for algorithms, you're probably using one of the great Python libraries. So scikit-learn, if you're doing traditional machine learning, or if you're attempting to do deep learning, you know, perhaps PyTorch, TensorFlow, JAX. And then visualizations, like you could either use a Python library or an R library to generate the JavaScript, or you could like fiddle with it yourself. But it's all like this multi-language process. And I'm really, really hopeful that we can get Python and R added to the Omni kernel that your team has created for Jupyter notebooks and for notebooks in VS Code, so that we can open up this to even more user types.
Absolutely. And I was doing a user study today, and the users, and it was with a group of students, and they said, you know, I use Python and R, but usually I have to like switch over to RStudio or open up a new notebook and then figure out how to share the data from one place to the other. And I was like, imagine if you could do this, right? Like you had it in a single notebook. And then we show them the JavaScript support, and they're just like, what? There's JavaScript support in notebooks? I was like, yeah. And it's pretty neat, right? So people are naturally just feeling the need for multi-language notebooks, whether you're a student who's doing AI and machine learning, or you're a person with troubleshoot guides where they're seeing a huge need for multi-language notebooks, and data scientists who are just like, I need to mix all these different languages in order to feel productive in my work, right? So I think there's a huge space opportunity for us here.
Absolutely. And the .NET Interactive experience, it also works in code spaces if folks want to go test it out. So it's definitely would love to hear feedback about, you know, notebooks and VS Code in general, and then in particular the kinds of languages that y'all are interested in seeing.
Hello, ladies. I'm back.
Greetings.
We got one comment from Louise. If you don't know where to start with your data and don't want to write too much code, Sandance is a great way to start.
Yeah.
Very much agree.
Yeah. I would agree.
I didn't know about Sandance before, so I'm always learning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's in Microsoft. It's a Microsoft research project, and they are amazing to work with. So try it out. Give them feedback. They are listening.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think we like on the Learn to Code page, it would be cool to show that, right, for people that want to get started. So on the Donna side, we have a Learn to Code page. Let me see if I can load that, and so we'll give you all the resources for you. It's like for it will give you the interactive notebooks extensions, and we'll help you to get started with like installing the Visual Studio and the coding packs for .NET.
Yep, absolutely. And the, you know, one of the other quite nice things that I love about .NET Interactive and the OmniKernel is that if you're a VS Code person, it works great there. But if you're also a person who comes from more of the Jupyter side, so Jupyter or JupyterLab, it also is supported there. And I think this sort of approach to welcome communities from all angles is very important. And being able to build infrastructure that supports multiple user types and meets them where they are is really, really nice to see.
We got a question from chat. Is publishing, packaging a notebook as a standalone app an executable thing?
No, it is not, but it is a frequently asked question, right? So one of the things that we've got a lot of is like, can I add another notebook as a package, right? Yep. We get that a lot. So maybe it's something we can explore. It's not a thing now, right? But it's something that has come up a lot.
Exactly. And it's also quite a frequent ask to be able to take a notebook file, so a .ipynb, and to be able to just have the ability to quickly refactor or to turn it into a Python module. So there are, for Python-specific notebooks, there are a couple of open source packages that allow you to attempt to convert it into an importable library. But I don't think, to Maria's point, I don't think there's one available for multi-language notebooks yet, though. No. That would be super interesting.
Not yet.
Yeah.
And do you have a public roadmap, Maria, for the .NET Interactive work? Because every time I hear you do a talk, there's always cool stuff being shipped. And so,
yeah. So we don't, right? I do believe that once we have the Python, like one of the things that Paige and I are hoping to do is have Python and R support, and then introducing when that will turn on. Another thing that we have built is like a validation kernel that can be used in the classroom that actually checks the students' work as they're looking at it. So I need to just write the roadmap. It's me. I have it in a PowerPoint. I just need to put it on our repo.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot.
No, it's good. I need to be put on the spot. People have been asking for it for months, and I just said, yeah, it's coming. So basically, let's just say by September, it will be there.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much. I'm wrapping up my shift here at .NET Conf, so it was my pleasure to be here with you all.